So thank you for joining us today for an interview with Jared Carter of Carter Physiotherapy in Austin, Texas. We're going to expose some ideas and interview his thoughts, Dr. Carter's thoughts around current projects, collaboration, following the rules, disruption, and I hope you enjoy this conversation I have with Jared. Jared's a doctor of physical therapy for over 10 years now and the founder of Carter Physiotherapy, which he established in the spring of 2010. Carter Physiotherapy is a direct consumer practice or a, quote, cash-based clinic, in terms more familiar to many physical therapists. Jared is the author of two books, My Cash-Based Practice and Medicare and Cash Pay Physical Therapy. He blogs, has a podcast, Cash-Based Practice Podcast, and is a frequent speaker on all aspects of the out-of-network practice model. Jared is active on social media, and you can follow him on Twitter at Dr. Jared Carter, Dr. Jared Carter, and connect and comment there as well. So I'm very excited to speak with you today, Jared. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. Where can people go to read your blog?
Well, first, thanks for having me, and I'm really excited about this new journey that you're starting. Obviously, we've been friends for a while now, and it's exciting to see you start sharing all that you know on a broader scale, so that's awesome. People can find me at drjaredcarter.com. It's drjarodcarter.com. That's the easiest place, the hub where, you know, pretty much all my content goes, except for probably some of the Facebook Live videos that I'm doing now.
Very cool. Well, thanks, and thanks for the kind words, too. So tell us, what are the current projects, or tell us about the current projects you're working on?
Well, let's see here. So time of this recording, it's early 2017, and really for the last year, I have pulled back a bit on the ongoing online blogging and podcasting projects and just kind of putting out like one podcast a month. And the reason for that is that I've been really refocusing my energy and time on growing my own practice. Up till the end of 2015, I pretty much had purposely kept it a solo practice. It was after about a year or two, I didn't really have to do any ongoing marketing. It was pretty smooth sailing, just being me. And I decided that I wanted to expand the practice and really build it into something that where I didn't have to be, you know, the one treating all the patients long term, and you know, grow it into a good size, but probably still, you know, smallish organization that's producing really, really great services for a lot of people, and maybe not taking quite as much of my time. So, so the last year I've been working on doing that. I hired my first PT right about a year ago, and then a few months after that, hired an office administrator, and we're now in the process of bringing on a massage therapist. And then I'm hoping that within the first half of 2017, I found my next physical therapist as well. So that's kind of what I'm focusing on now, and we can talk more about what I'm doing in that realm, but that's kind of the aims for this year.
Now, that's great. What prompted you to make that transition?
I guess, you know, after a while, there were a couple things. One, I realized that it just kind of struck me like your body is not necessarily going to hold up to doing all this manual therapy 5 days a week, you know, till you're 65 or wherever people decide they, you know, have done enough work and retire. So I knew that just ultimately I needed to make the shift in that direction for that reason. Because I was pretty much solely reliant on me being at the clinic, putting my hands on patients to make the majority of my income. And so I'm just working to, you know, create a multiple irons in the fire kind of revenue system in my life. And also just in terms of designing the life that I want, I know that I want to take some longer time away from the clinic in the future and be able to take my wife and maybe future kids around the world a bit and that kind of thing. So just looking long term, I knew it was a direction I had to move in and, you know, needed to get started on.
Very cool. So what do you like most about this transition and what you're currently working on?
In terms of liking the most,
enjoying, you know, intrigued.
Yeah, I think what my main focus is, even though it's a lot more work up front, is setting up, instead of just kind of rolling from day to day and just kind of repeating myself to staff all the time, I'm really taking the time to document exactly how I want everything done, whether it's a marketing system or a new patient onboarding or a post-discharge, you know, follow-up system, or, you know, all these various systems. I'm putting a ton of time into not just documenting and training staff on when necessary, but also implementing in automated ways, you know, using things like Infusionsoft and different platforms like that, or, you know, virtual assistants, whatever. I just hired a virtual assistant, actually, to do a great deal of our content and social media kind of repurposing and scheduling. And so though up front it's a ton of work, I guess in terms of enjoyment, it's not that enjoyable, but just the anticipation of once these systems are fully set up and once the people not only are trained, but there are documented, you know, task lists and videos and, you know, whatever else is needed for the next person. If that person leaves or I have to fire them, I'm not starting completely over. So I think just the anticipation of the long-term lack of stress and the time it's going to all free up once these things are in place, once I really work hard for the next 2 years to get the ball rolling, I'll then be in a situation where the organization can scale without just simply adding more projects and tasks and time to my plate. You know, it's going to be a lot more of a smooth sailing kind of thing, rather than just getting to that point of 5 to 10 employees and just being totally overwhelmed because, you know, so-and-so got pregnant and this other person decided to take another job and now I got to redo the whole training system with everybody, you know? So
right.
I think it's more the anticipation and just the enjoyment of knowing where I'm heading as I work on these things that I'm enjoying the most.
Well, thanks. Thanks for that. Let's go back a little bit. When was the last time that you had a job that you didn't own, and why did you make that transition away from that?
Let's see. The last time I was an employee would have been in, I guess, end of 2009, right before I started my practice. And I was working in a cash-based practice. I guess the way I would describe it is, the owner, who I deeply respect, he really felt like he needed to make a change to kind of our compensation arrangement, and it was a change that I couldn't really, for various reasons, accept. So I essentially just had to move on, and I didn't move on thinking immediately, I'm going to go start my own thing, but within a few weeks I had former patients reaching out and trying to find me through social media and whatnot to get treatment because they wanted to see me specifically. So after a few of those occurred, I thought, you know what? I mean, if I just see these few people, you know, and start with that, I'll actually have enough to pay the rent if I'm just seeing them at their homes. And, you know, if I can cover my bills right away, then I might be able to make this thing work. And so I did that, and it, you know, just kind of took off. So it wasn't that I had I think I always had the entrepreneurial bug, and I never quite felt right working for someone else, even though I had some really amazing mentors that I appreciate and still appreciate for all they did. I didn't leave that last job thinking, oh, it's time, I got to do this. It was more of just, you know, the opportunity kind of presented itself, and I went with it thinking, you know, if worse comes to worse, I'm a PT. There's like a job around every corner, you know, so I can always just pick up another job. part-time work, you know. I even looked at maybe doing like part-time home health while I got things going, but it picked up so quickly I didn't actually have to go that route.
Thanks. That's a great story. So you're known for cash-based practice. Can you tell us a little bit about how your passion for that developed?
Yeah, I think it was just a matter of a few things. One, having worked in the insurance-based realm and in practices that you know that did bill insurance and were participating with Medicare, and then also having some experience in as an independent contractor, just getting paid cash as well as for you know another practice that was cash pay only, and just seeing the differences there, the amount of time that you get to spend with patients and the freedom that you have when you're not constantly having to bend over backwards with your documentation and hiring people just to try and get paid for your hard-earned, you know, for your hard work and, you know, all those kind of things that so many practice owners out there are dealing with and really, really struggling with. I just thought, well, if I can do one or the other, if I can have success in either, I know which direction I want to go and I don't want to have to deal with insurance companies. And then the other part of it was just the writing on the wall of progressively declining reimbursement rates for our services. Meanwhile, you know, all of our vendors and our costs of doing business are certainly not going down the way our reimbursements are. So it looked like, you know, at some point it was going to become an unsustainable system. And, you know, it's a whole lot more enjoyable along the way, in my opinion, in the cash-based model. So those are the reasons I just pulled the trigger and took a leap of faith in that model.
Great. So given that and what you're saying about, you know, the time with patients, not having to deal with insurance, you know, the concept of an unsustainable system, how do you go about, or do you have any advice for people about how to sell the value of what you do so that, I guess obviously the price point's going to be higher for most patients versus going in that work with their insurance, but so how do you sell the value of you as a physical therapist and also the value of you, your practice specifically?
Mm-hmm. So before answering that question, I'll just make a quick side note that I'm finding very interesting now with the changes in that have developed from the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, in terms of with most people, in order to keep their premiums affordable, their monthly premiums for insurance affordable, they're having to take plans with higher and higher deductibles, and it seems like every year they raise the deductible or they raise the premium, and just people are kind of being forced into the scenario where they're paying $1,000 or $2,000 or $5,000 or more a year before they're really truly getting any of their costs covered in a significant way. And then secondly, PT, I've been hearing from all the people I consult with and speak with on this matter that PT copays are also going up in these plans, and overall just coverage for physical therapy is getting worse. So one thing I'm seeing now, which I had not really seen in the early years of my practice, is that there are actually plenty of cases, especially in the first half or three quarters of the year, if someone's not hit their deductible, where their cost per visit to the PT clinic is actually less to see, you know, me or one of my therapists, than if they went somewhere that's actually in network with their physical therapy. Because a lot of times, you know, in order to get that $100 back or whatever it might be from the insurance company, the bill that's being sent there is over $200. And until that deductible's met, guess who's paying that? The patient. And so what we're finding is that our $150 per visit is actually a lower cost for certain people with certain kinds of plans and high deductibles than if they went in network for all their PT until they met the deductible. So that, I just wanted to throw that out there as an aside that it's really an interesting kind of trend, and it's a bummer. I mean, it's good for my practice, of course, but I still don't like to see it happen because it's, I think, bad for the American people that this is a situation that we're in now. It really sucks. But for those who are interested in the cash pay model or those who are interested in transitioning out of network, you actually are in a situation now, or we are all in a situation where a lot of people, if they're educated to, if you're checking their benefits for them, or if they're checking them themselves and they're educated to do so, they might find that you're a better deal until the deductibles hit, you know, or a better deal after, the PT benefits are maxed out, you know, the eight visits you get that year are gone and you need more. And now all of a sudden, you know, and then you become a better deal if you're out of network. So there, you know, and the vast majority of the population does not know this. And so I consider it my job and the job of anyone out there who is in an out of network practice to start to educate. And, you know, doing videos, doing blog posts, talking about this online, training staff to discuss it with current patients, with incoming, you know, prospective patients, which I've done, and we'll be doing a lot more of in terms of the online kind of advertising, you could say, of this fact now. So that I just wanted to mention that. And then in terms of how, going back to the original question, sorry for being long-winded on this one.
Intriguing.
Yeah, so how do I sell the value of what we offer, you know, at Carter Physiotherapy or say, you know, at a similar cash pay practice? I mean, for one, you know, we spend an hour one-on-one with each patient. It's only doctors of PT, or only physical therapists. It doesn't matter to me if you have a DPT or not. It's more of we're not using PTAs and techs. So, you know, having an hour one-on-one with a physical therapist who's certified or fellowship trained in manual therapy, the majority of the time is being spent, you know, performing manual techniques and doing things that the patient can't just reproduce on their own or if they go to the gym, right? And so those are some key points that we hit on in a lot of different parts of our website and in the different ways that we talk with prospective patients who call in and maybe aren't sure if they want to go out of network or they're not, they didn't know we were out of network. And then we have that discussion with them and they're not really sure. So those are kind of the points that we make. And we draw the distinction. It's like, look, first of all, do you know what your, all the care points aside, do you know what your plan is really like? I mean, do you have a high deductible? Do you have a $75 PT copay, you know, because if you go down the road where they, quote, take your insurance, not only are you likely going to spend, you know, much less one-on-one time with your therapist, they're probably going to want to see you two or three times a week. You're probably going to be doing at least some, if not a lot, of things that you could be doing on your own rather than paying them for it. And, you know, if you've got a $75 copay or a high deductible to meet, you're probably going to come out ahead financially by seeing us and get better care. So those are the kind of things that we might say to a prospective patient or online or, you know, on the website to kind of differentiate what we do from others and sell the higher level service and the value that we provide. And I think it's also important to mention that if you're trying to sell the value of what you provide, it's good to mention those bullet point type things if you really do have a service that's notably different than most of your competition in the area. That's important. But you really want to make sure that you are first and foremost speaking in the language of your prospective client, which is not a physical therapist. So talking all day long until you're blue in the face about the fellowship training you have or the you know, joint manipulations that you do or, you know, that kind of stuff that we feel is so important because we spent so much time and money and energy learning it all and you know, obtaining that information, it actually does not really matter to 99% of the people who are in pain and looking for a solution. They're looking to get back to their sport. They're looking to get, you know, back to being able to work a whole day without being distracted by their low back pain. They're looking to get back to being able to walk the stairs or lift their grandkid over their head without terrible shoulder pain. Those are the kinds of things that you have to mix into your marketing messages, because people, after the fact, if you catch their information with those things that are important to them, then they're open to, okay, oh yeah, and they have a fellowship and they have a doctorate or and they're certified manual therapist, whatever. But in general, they don't really care about that stuff. So you got to make sure you're speaking their language and make those bullet point items secondary to catching their attention and getting them focused on the solution that you can provide, which is getting back to the lifestyle that they want to live and having the active, mobile life that they want. So those are, yeah, so those are kind of the high-level points of how we discuss and sell our value at Carter Physiotherapy.
Awesome. So focus on solutions, on their goals, not the tool, the physical therapist.
Right.
That's excellent. Okay. So given that kind of context that you just created for us, for that person who's listening to this and is curious and interested in moving out of network, at least with, you know, one of their lowest paying contracts or a couple of those, but they're fearful and holding back, what would you say to that person right now, that therapist, that owner?
Yeah, I mean, I have to have this conversation a lot, and I would say, first of all, you got to know your numbers, because sometimes the fear of dropping any contracts can be replaced by a healthier fear of not dropping. Like, what happens if I don't get out of this contract or drop this low paying insurance company? Because so going back to knowing your numbers, a lot of practices don't really have a clear idea, a really set clear number of their average cost per patient. And what we're seeing, especially with like capitated rate plans, is that if you've got a pretty high overhead, if you're in an expensive area, a lot of space, expensive equipment, you know, high overhead scenario, and your cost per patient is $60 or $55, and you're worried about keeping a contract that's only paying you $52 a patient or whatever, you know, but you're actually losing money on each patient and you don't know about it. Well, once you know your numbers and you see that that's the case, that's one, number one, that's going to make it a lot easier to go ahead and drop that contract. And so first of all, know your numbers. If you don't know those things, you got to know what your average cost per patient is so you can make more clear decisions on which contracts are actually worth keeping right now and which ones aren't. And then in terms of, you know, in terms of facing your fear on whether it's dropping the contracts, you know, the low-paying contracts, starting your own cash pay practice, or anything else in business that you're fearful of, I would say asking this question is really important. And it's, what's the worst thing that could happen? Can I get back to this point if things don't go as I hope or plan for them to go? In most cases, the answer is yes, you can get back there. You know, now I don't know about getting back into a good contract, you know, with one that was already crappy, but I guess the point I'm making is it's unlikely that dropping a contract, especially if it's not a huge percentage of your patient population or, you know, that holds that insurance, is going to be a business crippling move. And most likely you're going to be able to come out of the other end of that with better margins and a lot less stress and lower overhead for not having to deal with that terrible insurance company. And, you know, in the end, if you have to pick that contract back up or go back in the direction of taking some insurance, or maybe you started a cash pay clinic and it's not working out the way you wanted and you need to take some decent paying contracts, so be it. You know, in most cases, you can go back. It's not a move that you can't, come back from if it doesn't go as planned. And so between those two things, that generally will help people to really analyze what makes sense and, you know, get over the fear enough to pull the trigger and do what's right for their business and for themselves.
That is a great point. So know your cost per patient or per visit and ensure that your costs are covered at the very least.
Right.
And ask yourself, I love the question, what's the worst thing that could happen?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great way to frame it up. Thank you.
And I should give credit where credit's due. That actually I got from way back in 2007 when I first read The 4-Hour Work Week. with Tim Ferriss, and I've heard him repeat it a number of times. It's a great, great podcast. For those who haven't heard of it, you should look that podcast up. It's fantastic.
Awesome. Thanks. So let's do another little scenario here. I was about to say there is certain to be, but hopefully, I guess that's a little too confident. Hopefully someone in the future listening to this will be in a position where they think they want to start a business of their own, but they're holding back, again, possibly out of fear and uncertainty. So what other words and ideas would you offer to that person who hasn't yet started a business and is thinking about it?
Well, first I'd repeat the what's the worst that can happen, because especially in the healthcare realm, you know, like I'd said, when I started my practice, it's like, you know, even if it's not a very desirable job, I mean, anyone can find something at a skilled nursing facility or, you know, home health or something where, you know, to hold them over, you know, while they're getting the ball rolling, or if things fall apart and the business just flops, you can still get work, you know, at least at the time of this recording and for many years up to this point. Getting a job is never an issue. Having income is never an issue, has not been an issue for a very long time in healthcare, in most, almost all parts of the country. And I think most would agree that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe here and there, there's some markets where it's really tough to get any kind of job. But I think in general, especially among the physical therapy realm that we know best, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Well, the worst is it doesn't go well. You close up shop and you get another job. It's like, you know, you just kind of do what you have to do, but at least you gave it a shot. And I would say in most cases, it's probably, at least in terms of those who I've consulted with and helped to get into, you know, the cash pay model or just start a practice in general, most of the time, it actually goes better than they thought it would. There's a lot more fear about it, you know, not going as well as it ends up going than you know, those stories I hear from people who are like, yeah, I've been at it for 2 years and I'm still just really, really struggling. I have heard that, you know, and then we kind of work through why that is and figure it out. But most of the time it's more of, yeah, you know, it's gone really well. I figured it'd take a year or two to get to this point, and you know, I'm 6 months in and I've got a pretty decent caseload. So that's the first thing I have someone focus on. For those who are not in the healthcare realm that might be listening to this in the future, I would not just apply that to every field out there, obviously. But in healthcare, I think you can kind of be safe with the idea that you can always just get another job if it doesn't work out, and it makes sense to just go for it. If that's where your passion is, and if you're kind of like me where you don't really feel completely right about working for someone else and you know eventually that you'd like to have your own business, then just get started in some way. You know, there are so many people out there that talk for years and years and years about having their own business, and they either never start or they start so late. Once they finally do, they're like, man, why did I wait so long? I could have been so further along at this point if I had just started to work at this back when I started to talk about it. So less talking, more doing. And maybe that means taking a year while you're still working for someone else, to save up your money, to really, really save, you know, 6+ months of living expenses, and, you know, cut down your overhead in life. Make a plan to start with, you know, as little debt as possible, really bootstrap it. You know, if you have those kinds of concerns, continue working for someone else, but plan and save and get ready. Don't just continue talking about it and then decide to do it without having really done a lot of planning and preparation ahead of time.
That's great. Thank you for that advice. So you know this. I think a physical therapist is one of the best-kept secrets in healthcare. Physical therapists decrease overall costs. They address root cause of the issues people are encountering. There are virtually no side effects, you know, if it's done properly, and exercise is a wonder drug. So what are your thoughts on how we can best break that secret and get the word out?
You know, I think these days we have more avenues than ever in which to do that with, you know, just things like social media and how many more people are taking to their phone, you know, multiple times an hour. And so I think that that's pretty clear and obvious, and I would guess that most people would answer that question, you know, or include that in their answer to that question. But I think going back to something I mentioned earlier of, if you really want people to take notice of what we can do for them as physical therapists and how amazing physical therapy is, stop talking so much about physical therapy. You know, start talking more about improved mobility, you know, athletic achievements, you know, lifestyle changes that were all the result of the physical therapy that was provided. So I think just speaking in the language of the consumer, as opposed to speaking as a clinician that's so proud of what they do and all the MOBs and MNIPs that they've learned in the last course and whatever, you know, speak in their language and do it often and consistently online, and you will help our profession. You'll be part of the change and part of, you know, part of getting that message out in a skillful way that will actually resonate with the common person, and not just make you look impressive to your colleagues that retweet everything on Twitter, but you've never had like a normal non-clinical person retweet anything on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, you know? That's right. Kind of how I'd approach it.
Stop talking to each other and talk to the ultimate audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
In their language, yeah.
So that may be the same answer for this, but in what was remarkable too, you've mentioned the time of this recording a couple times. Yesterday, January 9th, 2017, was the 10th anniversary of the introduction of the iPhone. So we've only had these little touchscreen devices and stuff in our hands for 10 years. The terrain has changed a great deal. And I know you're very active and engaged in social media. What have you learned about engaging in social media that's really important for people that are just getting started that you might like to share with them, maybe in addition to speaking the language of the consumer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say, I mean, that's a big part of it for sure. I would also say that it's important to be engaged and conversational when possible. This is an area that I've not been all that great about, just because I've been so busy and focused and not taking the time and really like getting into a lot of back and forth actual social media conversations. And in terms of like the clinic, you know, posting questions and really getting a lot of interaction on the Facebook page, that's not happened yet. Hopefully it will more so in the future as I start to take things off my plate and I can do that more. But I would say that if you really want to build, you know, whether it's a personal brand or your business brand online, it can't just be informational posts, you know, links back to your blog post and, you know, posts to other information. I mean, I think that you need to strive to have some actual engagement beyond just the occasional like or share of your posts. And that's not always, I mean, that's not easy, especially when you're starting out. You're going to hear crickets for a long time, you know, unless you really are doing it right. I mean, there are examples of people who really can gain a very interactive and loyal audience quite quickly. But I mean, for most people, don't feel bad if you're doing all this social media stuff and you're just not really getting a lot of traction. Don't worry about that. It takes time and consistency. The other part of it, and that's more of the non-scheduled stuff. The other part of it is consistency, in that it does pay to have regularly scheduled content, whether it's, you know, audio, video, or text content that you have pre-scheduled. You've pre-done it, you've pre-scheduled it out, so that those who do follow you, they know that every Monday or every Wednesday or whatever it is, that new, you know, blog post on your niche, you know, that on your, you know, pelvic issues or low back pain or, you know, lacrosse niche or, you know, whatever, there's like, you know, thousands of them, but whatever you're most involved in your target market, is when you start to build a really consistent schedule of content that's useful and helpful for that niche market, then you want to make sure that you're giving them that content on a reliable schedule. And then kind of one more thing I'd add to that is that to stay up with what is kind of trending in terms of what Facebook and Twitter and these different platforms actually want to serve up to your audience. Right now, at the time of this recording, it's video in a big way. I mean, there's no doubt that when someone produces a video versus a written blog post that they're linking to, the Facebook algorithm is really serving that to a greater percentage of the people who have liked your page. And so you want to stay up on that because that will change over time. You know, who knows what's next, but you want to make sure that you're putting as much time as you can into the things that are going to give the biggest payoff. And so, like for those listening right now, if you're good with video and you're okay with kind of off the cuff type stuff, then I would definitely suggest getting into doing a regular Facebook Live broadcast to your target audience, because it's going to get out to a lot of people. You can set it. You can boost those posts, i.e., pay to put that video in front of people who haven't liked your page, and you can target that audience very specifically. You can do it geographically. So if you have a healthcare practice that focuses on low back pain, you could do, you know, a weekly Facebook Live Q&A on low back pain. Maybe mix in some, you know, stretches or exercises at the end of each one, and you know, just create something that's informative and helpful for your target market. And then after you're done, it'll stay on your page, and then you can, you know, pay $5 or $10 to get that out to people in a certain geographical area close to your practice that has a certain what's called behaviors, like. Facebook gives you the ability to target people in some pretty incredible ways, and somehow it knows if people have been exhibiting behaviors of back pain or talking about back pain, that kind of thing. So you could break that down for 1,001 different niches and just create your own Facebook Live show. And again, in the beginning, you probably won't have many people interacting with you, but over time, you can really grow a presence and create quite a business out of that.
Well, that's great advice. Thanks. So we're going to get back to disruption technology and stuff in just a minute, but I have another question for you first. You're coming up on 7 years in your practice, and congratulations, by the way. That's a big achievement in itself. But what's been the biggest obstacle you've run into since getting past that 5-year mark?
So since getting past it?
So in the last 2 years or so.
Yeah, so really it's just in this last year that I went from solo practitioner to, you know, having another PT and staff. That's where, of course, most issues arise when it's just you, and mostly it's, you know, you've done some good stuff online, done some good videos and blogging, and mostly word of mouth. Those things are kind of keeping you rolling as a solo practitioner. There's generally, if you're not in an area that gets badly hit economically, it's kind of smooth sailing. At least that was my experience. So really it was when I started to grow that I would say, you know, you start to feel more of the hurdles. And I've really lucked out with the two people I've hired so far. Actually, I guess now it's three since I have a full-time virtual assistant, and she's been great as well. So I can't speak to hiring, and I'm sure if you ask that question, or employee management, if you ask that question of, you know, your future guests, that will come up a lot, and they'll probably have a lot of good content on that topic. One thing I would say to it is hire slow and fire fast, and that's just a common statement that is great advice, but very few people actually take it. You know, usually they wait till they're desperate to hire someone, they hire too quickly, and then they hold on to people who are mediocre or really need to be let go, and they hold on to them for way too long. So with me, I would say the hurdles have probably come from being being a little more short-sighted in terms of the training of staff. And I feel like, again, I lucked out with the staff, but I was so just, we were in such a rush to try and kind of get the new PT schedule full, that my focus was almost completely on marketing as opposed to ahead of time setting up really good, solid onboarding procedures and policies for, you know, the new staff and for everyone in the future that comes in. So now I'm going back, you know, as I'm continuing to train the staff, I'm again really putting a lot of time into documenting that. And I would say that's been the biggest hurdle and kind of the biggest stress of just being overwhelmed with trying to onboard everyone without having those things set up ahead of time. It's just, you know, it's just a ton of work and it's stressful, and especially when the schedule's not quite full. But luckily, Ben is an amazing practitioner and a really great personality. So it's not like he's staying completely fully booked at all times. We're already having, you know, strings of weeks where he's really quite busy. So it's gone well. And I would say the hurdles past the 5-year mark have been just an association with, you know, trying to grow, but they haven't been nearly as big, you know, problems as I've heard in other businesses, you know, that I've consulted with.
Great. Thank you. That's those are some great insights, though. And I will follow up with you on an onboarding idea later, too.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
But, so we're living in an unprecedented era of disruption. We've never seen, I don't think, in the history of mankind, the kind of rapidity and speed of disruption and changes in technology and business and society. What are your thoughts on what kind of disruption we'll see in the physical therapist and healthcare industries over the next 10 plus years?
10 plus years? Let's see.
10 years.
I think I would say two things to keep an eye out for in terms of opportunities that will open up, as well as just what's going to be interesting and different than what we experience now. One is telehealth. Obviously, doesn't function as much for a manual therapist, but there really is quite a lot that can be done with, you know, if you have the right software system set up and video conferencing, you know, you could take someone through a movement assessment and probably get a good idea even just talking to them, you know, about what's going on, what probably needs to be done. And there's value in that, you know. I mean, if you're there's a lot of different scenarios where people would be willing to pay for something like that, as opposed to if they were convinced that you had a higher level of knowledge, you were going to be able to give them the best answers, that they'd be willing to do, you know, something via telehealth as opposed to, you know, going and seeing the cookie cutter PT down the road that's going to spend 5 minutes with them. So I think that's going to open up some opportunities. And if the laws change to allow it, not only would it open up opportunities where you could do telehealth conferencing and consultation within your own state, but anywhere in the world, you know. And now all of a sudden, each one of us would have potentially, you know, a market of anyone in the world who's in pain and searching for a solution and has the right, you know, technology, which is not going to be expensive or rare in the future. So that's one thing. And then I think we're actually going to see some applications for rehabilitation via virtual reality as well. I think there's going to be possibilities for some really, really crazy, amazing stuff with, you know, virtual, literally like virtual therapists, virtual personal trainers, that kind of a thing, when it's set up such that, like, you have on the, whether it's goggles or not, but like you're literally in a room where you can move, and there are, like, you know, people are wearing suits that give feedback, and, you know, it's going to be pretty amazing what becomes possible, even in terms of, like, I know this is going to sound crazy, but if you're looking really far in the future, and you look at what they're starting to have now with virtual reality, where people are in kind of full body suits that give certain compression or, you know, sensations, that we could even see some level of actual like, I don't know if you'd call it manual therapy, but the response that people get to being touched, you know, in certain ways. And certainly, I mean, there's a huge component of what we do that is literally placebo effect. You know, people feel cared for, they've been pushed on this way and that, and they're like, in their mind, they're going to get better and their body gets better. And we know through, you know, various studies that, you know, at least a percentage of what we do as manual physical therapists is actually just placebo effect. So that kind of thing is going to be reproducible, I think, in the not too distant future with virtual reality type technology. So who knows how far down the road, but I think we're going to see some pretty wild stuff coming up here.
Well, that's really cool. Thanks for sharing that. So what questions so far have I not asked you that you were hoping or would want me to?
Oh, man.
And if nothing's come to mind, that's quite all right.
Yeah, these have been great questions. I've really enjoyed it. A lot of time with interviews, things are so almost solely focused on marketing techniques and just the cash pay model. It's been kind of cool to think a little bit outside of that and just in terms of business as a whole and, you know, disruptive technologies and that kind of thing. So this has been fun. Yeah, I mean, nothing really comes to mind right now in terms of like a question I was hoping that you'd ask, but I'm open to more questions.
Cool. Well, we're about to wind down. I'm trying to stay with good questions, but not too many of them. Mm-hmm. But when you look forward over the next year, what's next for you?
Next is really just as I mentioned before, a continued focus on setting up systems that are automated when possible, and taken care of by a growing and very well trained team of staff. That's really my big focus. I am hoping that once I get my first assistant trained to really repurpose a lot of the videos that I'll be doing for my clinic into multiple forms of content and spread out on the different social media platforms, I'm hoping to get another assistant, a full-time assistant, to do the same thing essentially, but for drjaredcarter.com. Because I have had to kind of pull back on the content just through lack of time and needing to focus on the clinic. But if, you know, once I get those systems in place for the first business, and it's all documented and you know, screen recorded, it shouldn't be too difficult to hire someone and within a few minutes have them up to speed to do the same thing. And I've already even started doing some Facebook Live videos at the drjaredcarter.com Facebook page. So I want to do more of the live video and just, you know, pre-recorded video stuff, and hopefully building my staff out will allow me to refocus on producing more content for my online audience, as well as my you know, prospective patients and clinical business as well.
That's great. Thank you. You know, you'll have to keep us posted and we'll stay tuned learning
cool.
how that goes. So for those listening, you heard Jared's call to action to do more to get the word out about physical therapists via social media, video, and also your current patients, and focusing, talking about the solution versus just about physical therapy. It was great talking with you today, Jared, and I really, really appreciate your time and willingness to share and to really be thoughtful and go deep on these ideas and all with all of us. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. For our conversation with Jared Carter, this is Strudy McKee. You can reach me and share your thoughts at strudymckee.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you very much, Jared.
Thank you, Strudy. I appreciate it.